And now here is the speech by Tom Berger from Wednesday the 5th's talk at the University of Winnipeg.
I just want to take you back to 1867, the year of Confederation, when John A. Macdonald brought together four colonies to create what was then known as the Dominion of Canada. He wanted to make this a country that extended from sea to sea. And at that time, England had given a charter to the Company of Gentlemen Adventurers trading into Hudson's Bay, and you still have a Hudson Bay store here in town. And they were given a charter for all the land extending from what is now the Ontario border to the Rocky Mountains and north to the Arctic Ocean. This is crazy, but that's what they did. And they still held it in 1867. And John A. Macdonald wanted to acquire that land. It was known as Rupert's Land, after Prince Rupert, the head of the Hudson's Bay Company in 1670. He wanted to take Rupert's Land in. He wanted to go on from there to bring British Columbia into Confederation. So this was part of his grand plan. And he had to go west. And he wanted the government of the United Kingdom in London to agree to give Canada this great area, Rupert's Land, and the government of Canada, government of Great Britain, agreed in principle. Queen Victoria was on the throne then, and her government said, yes, we think that's a good idea. But you have to pay off the Hudson's Bay Company. They were to get £300,000, a lot of money in those days, and land around all of their forts. And Sir John thought that was all there was to it, and he sent surveyors out and road builders. And he sent them out to Red River. Now, that was what Winnipeg was called. If you think about the history of Winnipeg, it didn't just begin in 1870. There was a community here at the forts called Red River. And it was a Métis community. It had been a Métis community for decades. The children of French and Scottish traders had formed this new nation in the 18th century and 19th century. And here, at what was called Red River, there were 12,000 people living. 10,000 were Métis. 2,000 were white people. They were known as the Canadians. And there were 500 First Nations people. But it was a Métis community, and Macdonald had to do something about the Métis, because by this time they were the dominant element in the settlement. They were hunters. They had rifles. Riel formed a provisional government in 1869, in the fall of 1869. It was largely supported not only by the Métis, but by most of the Canadians. Because everybody felt, in a sense, that they had been excluded. This place was the gateway to the West, and put Macdonald in a dilemma. Because the British said to Macdonald, you know those people out West that are resisting the Canadian advance into Rupert's Land, they said, you've got to make a deal with them. We're not going to give you troops. You've got to sit down and make concession to those people. Riel's government had the loyalty of the great majority of people at Red River, not only the Métis, but the white folks as well. But I wanted to quote from what Chief Justice Freedman said about the provisional government. He said, the French-speaking citizens of Manitoba, including not only the famous Louis Riel, but all the representatives of the French-speaking parishes, who, it must be mentioned, reached a remarkable unanimity with their English-speaking representatives, were induced to put an end to the Red River insurrection and to support the creation of a province and its union with Canada only on the basis that their rights would be ensured for the future. So that was why delegation had been sent from Red River to Ottawa to negotiate with MacDonald. Johnny MacDonald, as you know, was a man who liked to take a drink, and his biographer, Donald Creighton, tells us that during many of the negotiations, he was remained in bed, he was ill, and the traditional explanation given for his illness in the House of Commons in those days was accepted, but everyone knew that he was a man who had perhaps had a little too much to drink. But he turned up at the end of the negotiations and agreed to the deal that Cartier and Father Richard had worked out. And it included a promise. This was to be a province, a very small province, the old postage stamp province. It included a promise that the Roman Catholic schools were to be subsidized by the government. It included a promise that this was to be a bilingual province where English and French would be spoken in the legislature and in the courts. All the statutes would be written in French and English. And included promises to the Métis. Now, the most important of those promises was that the children of the Métis, the next generation, because the Métis folks, the heads of families, had properties along the Assiniboine and the Red Rivers, the children of the Métis, and there were 12,000 Métis, 7,000 were children. Those children, the next generation, were to receive 1.4 million acres so that the Métis would retain their place right at the heart of the new province. They would be landowners, settlers thriving in this new province that was to come about. And Johnny MacDonald, to do him credit, he defended this agreement sturdily in the House of Commons. The opposition thought he was giving too much land to the Métis. Why should they get any land anyway? He said, no, that's the promise we've made to them, and I believe it's right that they should have this land. And the Supreme Court of Canada, in its decision in March last year, described that promise of 1.4 million acres of land for the next generation as the central promise obtained by the Métis to ensure that they did not become a marginalized minority in this province. So the Manitoba Act was passed in May 1870. Father Richard returned here to Red River and spoke to the Legislative Assembly of the Provisional Government. Louis Riel presided. Father Richard gave his report in French because the majority of people who lived here then were actually French speakers. And Louis Riel translated Richard's report from French into English. Everybody discussed it. Father Richard said to the people at to the people in the Legislative Assembly at Red River, he said, "I believe the Canadians are serious. I believe we can trust them." And so they voted unanimously to enter Canada as the new province of Manitoba. That meant that Canada was safe, that Red River, the gateway to the west, to the prairies and the north, was going to be Canadian. And MacDonald was worried throughout that if he wasn't able to make a deal with Riel and Richard and the provisional government, the Americans would move in. This is why Winnipeg is Canadian and not American today, why the prairies are Canadian and not American.
You're listening to a speech given by Justice Tom Berger, who is at the University of Winnipeg on February 5th at Convocation Call, giving some of the background on the Manitoba Métis land claims decision and the story of Winnipeg's early years. And so he was playing. He represented the Manitoba Métis Federation in the land claims case, that famous case that ruled in favor of the Métis. Just last March. It is 8:30. You're listening to People of Interest on CKUW 95.9 FM, where the temperature is minus 7.6 degrees outside. And I'm your host, Michael Welch, and we're just listening to more. We're going to listen to some more of that speech, this being the Louis Riel Day. So here's more of Justice Berger and his talk.
Once the deal was made, Britain agreed that MacDonald could have soldiers to come west. In the Manitoba Métis case, the federal government called a number of expert witnesses, but one of them was Professor Gerhard Enns, a Manitoban, a history professor, who testified for Canada, and he admitted that when the soldiers and the settlers arrived, there was a reign of terror here in Winnipeg against the Métis, that Métis who dared to show their face in town could be beaten. He also pointed out that there was, for a time, mob rule in Winnipeg. And that kind of set the tone in this place. Now, what about the promise to the Métis? 1.4 million acres. And that's, at the trial, the judge, Judge McGuinness of the Queen's Bench here in Manitoba, though he held against us, he said that was intended to give the Métis a head start. In the Court of Appeal, Chief Justice Scott of Manitoba, who wrote the judgment of the Court of Appeal, he was against us, but he agreed. The whole idea was to give the Métis community a head start, that next generation would become landholders and settlers just as their parents already were. The Métis never got their head start. They didn't get to the starting line for 10 years. In the meantime, the Métis, who started out as a majority in the new Legislative Assembly of Manitoba, within 10 years had become very much a minority. And the Ontarians were in the majority. The first allotment of land to the children, and they had to figure out, well, how many children are there? 7,000. And you divide that into 1.4 million acres and you get so much acreage for each child. Well, it isn't all, you know, it isn't rocket science. They held a lottery in each parish, and they had certain lands that were to be set aside for the Métis, and they had a little stamp, or whatever you call it, for each lot. And then they had the names of the children, and they'd draw, as the name of a child would come up, the lieutenant governor could draw a little piece of paper with a description of the property. Well, that's not too difficult. And they were ready to, it took them 3 years, but they were ready to go ahead with the first allotment. And then they discovered that they had included all the adults as well as the children, so they had to scrap it. The law officers of the Crown in Ottawa said, you can't go ahead with this. And clearly it was against the, it was a violation of Section 31 of the Manitoba Act. So then they decided that the original census of 1870 had not been accurately taken. That is, the first lieutenant governor, Adams Archibald, had had teams go around to take that census in 1870. French language people going around in English language, and he came up with those figures. 12,000 people, 10,000 are Métis, 7,000 are children, 2,000 Canadians, and so on. I've rounded those figures off. That's not absolutely accurate. But then in the mid-1870s, Canada decided that there weren't that many children. Well, how did they figure that out? Well, it turned out that if the number was brought down to about 5,000, it would be convenient for the Dominion Lands Office, because somehow the numbers would work out, and it's quite complicated, but they had this idea in mind. And the cabinet, by order in council, decreed that there had to be a new enumeration. But the cabinet said, in the order in council, no sufficient explanation has been given us to explain why that original census is at fault. It's right there in the order in council. And of course, the census, the original one was right. They fooled around with this new system for 2 or 3 years, discovered that it wouldn't work. You know, it was, I guess, a little bit like President Obama's computer. You know, it was bureaucratic, a failure of bureaucratic intelligence, I guess. I have no idea why his computer didn't work, but I'm just saying these things. Well, anyway, then by this time it was 1876. Now, 6 years had gone by. They could have done this within the first 12 months. The Métis children would have had their land. The new province would have been set to go. But no, the Métis were still waiting for their land. Then he, in this climate of hostility towards the Métis that bled over from Ontario into Manitoba, the third allotment was in 1876, and it never seemed to get anywhere. And by 1880, finally they began to allot land to the children. That is, they got a little piece of paper, but they didn't get a deed. They didn't complete the deeds until 1885, all of them. 15 years had gone by. You know, I'm not making this up. In the end, they discovered they had left 900 children out because, of course, they had decided the original census, an accurate one, was one they wouldn't follow. And those 900 children received scrip, which was worth only about one quarter to one half what actual land would have been. Well, Professor Enns, who, remember, was an expert witness for the Crown, for our opponents, he had written in Manitoba Historical Journal in the 1880s, after studying the matter, he said, the government of Manitoba, the judiciary, and the whole of the leading figures in the business community had decided that giving all this land to the Métis children was a mistake and an impediment to progress, and that the land had to be appropriated and brought into the common stock of land held by people in the community. It had to be removed from the ownership of the Métis and brought into non-Métis ownership, legally or illegally. Now, John A. Macdonald, when he spoke in the House, when he was introducing the Manitoba Act, spoke about this, and he knew exactly why Father Richard and Cartier had included it in the agreement. And he said, this land is for the Métis, when they turn 18, to become owners and settlers. And he said, not one acre is to go to speculators. Sir John, you know, left office in 1873. There was a scandal over the financing of the Canadian Pacific Railway. The Liberals took over. In 1877, the Minister of the Interior in the Liberal government of the day, David Mills, said that owing to the designs of speculators, the majority of claims of half-breed children, those are the Métis children, as the same mature, will pass from the owners for comparatively a mere nominal consideration. In other words, speculators are going to get the money, the land, for virtually nothing. He went on, the probable practical operation of the children's grant, as proposed, will, for the reasons I have given, fall very short, far short of realizing the benefit to the claimants which was contemplated. And then he adds this, and there remains the serious objection to the scheme, that is, the locking up for years of the greater portion of the lands, because, of course, this was to go to the children, and in 1870, those children ranged in age from 21 right down to maybe a couple of weeks. I mean, the last...
This is Robin Erickson, host of Hit the Big Wide Strum, Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 5, and it is with your generous support that CKUW is able to bring you 2 hours of great old-time and bluegrass music.
CKUW involves the community in making great radio. In fact, it's through the community support that we are able to provide the kind of alternative programming you have come to value. There are countless people like you who demonstrated how much they value what we do by pledging to our fund drive, and we thank all of you. There are many local businesses that deserve our thanks as well for providing coffee and goodies to our hardworking volunteers over fund drive. From all of us to all of you, thank you. You make what we do possible. If you would like to support CKUW with a pledge, go to fundrive.ckuw.ca.
It's 8:42. You're listening to People of Interest on CKUW 95.9 FM, and we've been listening to a lecture, the Bonnie Castle lecture, given this year by Justice Tom Berger, a retired judge and lawyer who represented the Métis at a historic for the historic Manitoba Métis land claims decision, which came down. The ruling came down just last March. He's talking about the background of that decision. So we'll play out the rest of that lecture before going into Democracy Now. So here we go. Tom Berger at the University of Winnipeg.
So it was clear the federal government acting as guardian. And Cartier in the House of Commons said, we are the guardians of the land for those children. And ministers continued to say that in the House of Commons up until 1870, even as this massive bureaucratic failure unrolled and the massive speculation gained momentum. The Manitoba legislature started passing statutes about that land. And in 1878, on the same day, they passed two statutes to protect the lands of children. Now, children in law are known as infants, and that's anybody from 1 day old to age 21, whatever the age of majority happens to be. And Manitoba copied a statute from Ontario to protect children. It meant that if you had a 7-year-old to sign a document to buy a horse, you can't enforce it, you can't take him to court. The statute in Ontario said that before any land belonging to a child under 21 could be sold, it had to be approved by a court. Well, that was adopted in Manitoba, that statute, and it was called the Infants Act. And the same day, another statute was passed called an Act relating to the lands held by half-breed children. And you know what's coming next. It was a statute that was to deal specially with the lands of the Métis children. And of course, it provided that there were virtually no safeguards to protect their interests. They still had to go to court, but the evidence showed that judges were stamping their approval on these sales of Métis infant lands to speculators. They were stamping their approval on them in batches because they weren't required to hold a hearing. Well, is this in the best interest of this child? You know, to get 25 cents an acre when it's going for $2.50 on the market. Manitoba passed a number of statutes in that vein. And in 1881, some of the judges of the Manitoba Queen's Bench were so upset, they complained to the government that some other judges were approving these things in bunches, and they asked that an inquiry be held. And there was an inquiry. And two prominent Manitobans were the commissioners of inquiry. And evidence was called, and there was proof that all of these practices had been adopted by the legal profession and by the judges to ensure that the Métis lands moved swiftly from the ownership of the Métis children into the ownership of speculators. The evidence came out, and young lawyer had been appointed by the Attorney General to act as commission counsel. And when all the evidence was in, he had prepared a long speech listing all of these corrupt practices. And his speech was transcribed. You can still see it today. And it's a shocking document. So what did the commission do? They did nothing. They didn't even issue a report. They made no findings, no recommendations. And as Professor Enns himself said, the whole idea was, now that they had exposed all these corrupt practices, the whole idea was to pass legislation regularizing everything which had been done, which over a period of years, culminating in the final passage of legislation in 1885, the Manitoba legislature did. Who protested? I mean, weren't there people around to protest? What about the legal profession? The only protests came from the Manitoba Law Students Association. So that's a mark on the wall for those young folks of that day. Well, you know that the... And the Lieutenant Governor at one point wrote to Ottawa and said, there is a frightful spirit of bigotry prevailing among many of our citizens. And of course, in 1890, 20 years after the establishment of the province, the Manitoba legislature passed a law that said there will be no more government subsidies for the Roman Catholic schools, even though that was one of the promises obtained when Manitoba entered Confederation. And we are not any longer going to be a bilingual province. Until that point, you could use both languages in the courts. The Manitoba statutes were printed in English and in French. 1890, the Manitoba legislature said, no, we're through with that. No more bilingualism for us. And you know that the issue the rights of Franco-Manitobans finally went to the Supreme Court of Canada in the 1970s and 1980s, and their rights in the Manitoba Act were upheld. I want to just conclude by saying that all this happened here in Winnipeg 140 years ago. 140 years ago. Now, we persuaded the Supreme Court of Canada that they could still rule on the matter, even though the statute of limitations had long since passed. The statute of limitations said you had to sue within 6 years. So we were about 125 years out of time. But the Supreme Court of Canada, making new law, said that if you challenge the constitutional behavior of the executive branch of government and establish a breach of what is called the honor of the crown, the courts will still rule on it, because in a federal state like Canada, you cannot allow a law that is unconstitutional to stand. That was a number of important issues that the Supreme Court of Canada dealt with. Another one was the, what we call, it's a technical term, it's called the question of standing. That is, 140 years later, the Métis who lived here in 1870 are all dead. The land is passed into the common stock. Nobody can say, well, that was supposed to be my great-granddaddy's, and I want it. That was utterly impractical. There was no legal footing for it. But the Manitoba Métis Federation had, coming together in the late 60s, started the search for evidence. What had happened? How had that land been lost? Why didn't the Métis have it today? And that was the search that they began, the Manitoba Métis Federation, and they brought it before the courts as early as 1980, as David said, and it went to the Supreme Court in 1990. The Manitoba courts, on a technicality, it's an important point, but it was a technicality, I won't go into it now, they threw the case out. And we had to go to the Supreme Court of Canada the first time in the 1990s to obtain a ruling, unanimous, 9-0, that this case should go to trial. And then we lost again before the Manitoba courts in the 21st century when we finally had the trial and the appeal, but we were successful in the Supreme Court of Canada. Now, all along, the argument against us was, among others, well, there's nobody here to prosecute this case. All these people are dead. We said in the Manitoba Métis Federation. We also had named as plaintiffs at least 11 Métis living here today who were descendants of the Métis who lived here in the 1870s. But we said the Manitoba Métis is entitled to speak for the Manitoba Métis. They're an Aboriginal people. They have a collective interest in seeing that the promises that Johnny MacDonald made to Louis Riel and his delegate, Father Richard, are kept. What happened to those promises? Why weren't they fulfilled? And the Supreme Court of Canada, in an important feature of their judgment, said, the Manitoba Métis Federation has standing to bring this case forward because it's the only body that could ever have done it. No single litigant could say, I'm going to get to the bottom of this and go to the archives and then go to the Supreme Court, not once but twice. But the Manitoba Métis Federation did that. And the Manitoba Métis Federation, led by David, said, we're not going to recede into the woodwork and just become victims of some past wrong. This is Canada. We believe this wrong can be rectified before the courts and that Canadians will recognize the need for rectification. And that's why, though it's 140 years ago, the case is important to our definition of Canada, if you will, because Canada is still here and the Métis are still here. They are recognized as one of Canada's Aboriginal peoples under Section 35 of the Constitution Act, and they've proven their case that a promise was made to them that their children would get 1.4 million acres and that the promise, a promise embedded in our country's constitution, was not fulfilled. And the Supreme Court reached back into the past, justified by a complete documentary record. And the court made clear that Canada failed to keep its promise to fulfill its constitutional obligation. So this tale is not simply a footnote to the saga of Canada's westward expansion. We do not believe in this country that we can leave behind a trail of historical wreckage and move on decade to decade. It's not enough to sigh regretfully and at the recollection of injustice and to say it was simply the price of progress. We've done better than that. And the Supreme Court wrote, this is our Supreme Court of Canada writing in March of last year, what is at issue is a constitutional grievance going back a century and a half. So long as the issue remains outstanding, the goal of reconciliation and constitutional harmony remains unachieved. The ongoing rift in the national fabric remains unremedied. And I would just say that the next step, obviously, is for the federal government and Manitoba to sit down with the Métis and reach a settlement. And I don't pretend to know what that settlement would look like. The Supreme Court of Canada made it clear the Métis are distinctive Aboriginal people, distinct from the Indians and the Inuit. And they had distinctive ways of landholding. They held land as individuals and as families. They didn't ask for reserves to be set aside for them. And the court made it clear that this is a case, in a sense, that's unique because it's about the Métis. There must be a settlement, and it will be for the Métis and their partners in the negotiation to work out what that settlement will look like. It may not look exactly like a First Nations land claim settlement or an Inuit land claim settlement. This is going to be a further step in the Canadian journey, and because he came to my 65th birthday party, you'll have a pretty good idea of what age I've reached now, and I may not be around to see the unfolding of this tale. But I want to leave you with the words of Louis Riel, who lived on and was tried for treason in 1885 and hanged. During his closing speech to the jury, Louis Riel talked about the events of 1869-70. And he said, it is to be understood that there were two societies who treated together. One was small, but in its smallness had its rights. The other was great, but in its greatness had no greater rights than the small, because the right is the same for everyone. Now, those words of Riel would not today be a compelling coda to the judgment of the Supreme Court of Canada if it had not been for the perseverance of the Manitoba Métis. They brought the case. They represented the collective will of the Manitoba Métis in a way that was recognized by the Supreme Court of Canada. And they launched this journey into our past and established its relevance to our present. I remind you that this is about events that represent a pivot in Canadian history, events that took place right here in the place we call Winnipeg. And this is Métis history, to be sure, but it's just as much Canadian history. And it offers an opportunity to the Government of Canada, Government of Manitoba, and the Métis to make history by negotiating a new settlement and mending this rift in the national fabric. So, thank you very much. Delighted to be with you.
That was Thomas Berger, the Berger, Justice, former Justice Tom Berger, who represented the Manitoba Métis Federation in the latest land claims case.